Welcome to SCOTUS Cast. Blood pools, ineffectiveness of counsel, and the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 19, 2011, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Harrington v. Richter, a federal habeas case. Under the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act, or AEDPA, the availability of federal habeas relief is limited with regard to claims previously adjudicated on the merits in state courts. Richter raises the question of whether that provision of AEDPA applies when state court relief is denied without a statement of reasons. If AEDPA does apply, the question then becomes whether the state court's decision was contrary to or involved an unreasonable application of clearly established federal law. In the proceedings below, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit ruled for Richter, concluding that even if AEDPA did apply, the underlying state court's denial of relief to Richter, based on his claim of ineffective assistance of counsel, had been unreasonable. The U.S. Supreme Court disagreed. Reversing the Ninth Circuit's decision, the High Court held that AEDPA did apply and that the state court's decision was not an unreasonable application of clearly established federal law. Justice Kennedy delivered the opinion of the court, joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Scalia, Breyer, Thomas, Alito, and Sotomayor. Justice Ginsburg filed an opinion concurring in the judgment. Justice Kagan took no part in the consideration or decision of the case. To discuss the case, we have D. Scott Broyles, who is an assistant professor at Charlotte School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Broyles.
Hello, my name is Scott Broyles. I'm an assistant professor of law at the Charlotte School of Law, and I'm here today to talk about a case recently decided by the Supreme Court. The case name is Harrington versus Richter. Now, a California trial court convicted the defendant, Mr. Richter, of burglary and murder. The facts are a bit complex, but basically they revolved around an apparent burglary that occurred in the home of a drug dealer named Joshua Johnson. During the burglary, Johnson and another man named Klein, who was with Johnson in his house, were shot, and Johnson's gun safe, a pistol, and $6,000 in cash were taken from his home. Johnson's gun safe, as well as other evidence connected with bullets and shell casings that were tied to the shooting, were later recovered from the home of the defendant, Richter. Johnson stated that Richter and his partner had robbed and shot Mr. Johnson and Mr. Klein. Klein later died from his wounds. One of the main issues in the case concerned blood samples that were found in Johnson's house after the burglary and apparent shooting. Defendant Richter claimed that his partner had shot in self-defense and that Johnson's account of what had happened was false. Defendant Richter argued that the blood samples would prove his story was accurate. Although Richter's defense counsel had vigorously cross-examined the prosecution's expert witnesses regarding the blood samples and exposed some weaknesses in their testimony, he had not called his own expert witnesses for the defense in order to further undermine the prosecution's case. Richter was found guilty in the state court. Richter then lost his state court appeal to the California Supreme Court. He then filed for relief in a California federal district court, alleging ineffective assistance of counsel pursuant to federal statute 28 U.S. Code 2254D. This is a type of habeas corpus relief connected with our Sixth Amendment right to counsel. So he was invoking federal constitutional principles, which the ineffective assistance of counsel statute allows defendants to do. The federal district court, however, denied Richter's petition for relief in his claim for ineffective assistance of counsel. Richter then appealed to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. The Ninth Circuit granted Richter's petition and reversed the federal district court. In reversing the federal district court, the Ninth Circuit held that the California Supreme Court's determination that Mr. Richter was not denied effective assistance of counsel was unreasonable. Ninth Circuit again said that the California Supreme Court was unreasonable when it said that Mr. Richter had not been denied effective assistance of counsel. The Ninth Circuit reasoned that under the Supreme Court case of Strickland versus Washington, the defendant had shown that, one, defense counsel's performance was deficient, and two, that the deficient performance prejudiced the defendant's case. Both of these Strickland prongs must be met in order to prevail on an ineffective assistance of counsel claim. Here, according to the Ninth Circuit, the requirements of Strickland were met when Mr. Richter's counsel failed to conduct sufficient pretrial investigation and present expert evidence concerning blood samples found at the crime scene. The federal ineffective assistance of counsel statute, the 2254D statute, involves providing relief to defendants whose counsel was ineffective, thus protecting their Sixth Amendment right to counsel. However, 2254D does not allow relitigation of a claim which has been, quote, adjudicated on the merits in a state court, here California, unless the state's court decision involved a, quote, unreasonable application, end quote, of federal law. In this case, the Ninth Circuit did indeed say that the California Supreme Court had not been reasonable when it ruled that Richter's counsel was not ineffective. In short, the Ninth Circuit maintained defense counsel should have presented evidence by way of its own experts concerning the blood samples in question. The Ninth Circuit also ruled that the California Supreme Court should have provided a statement of reasons explaining why it ruled as it did. The U.S. Supreme Court granted certiorari to hear the appeal of the Ninth Circuit's ruling. Writing for the court, Justice Kennedy ruled, first of all, that the Ninth Circuit was in error when it ruled that the federal ineffective assistance statute requires the state court to provide a statement of its reasons for deciding as it did. The California Supreme Court had not provided such a statement of its reasons, but nothing in the statute, Justice Kennedy ruled, requires such a statement of reasons. More interestingly and importantly, I think, is Justice Kennedy's ruling that the Ninth Circuit erred in applying the federal ineffective assistance of counsel statute on its merits regarding the expert testimony. Justice Kennedy made two points on this question. First of all, the Ninth Circuit had not given sufficient deference to the state court's decision. Secondly, the Ninth Circuit had found ineffective assistance when there had been no such showing of ineffectiveness. With regard to the first issue concerning deference to the state court, the case law holds that there is a kind of federalism concern whereby state court decisions should not be overturned lightly. In other words, the Ninth Circuit should have been more deferential to California state court's decision when the Ninth Circuit had found that its decision was unreasonable. With regard to the second issue of ineffective assistance of counsel, Justice Kennedy ruled that the Ninth Circuit had misapplied the law here as well. Contrary to the Ninth Circuit's ruling, counsel does not have to provide perfect assistance to a defendant in order to qualify as effective. Indeed, under the Supreme Court's prior decision, there is a strong presumption that the defense counsel's assistance was effective. In short, the Ninth Circuit had ignored this presumption in favor of effectiveness. Trials are difficult, and reasonable minds can differ as to how best to present an effective defense. Even though Richter's counsel had not presented his own experts concerning the blood samples, this fact did not mean counsel was ineffective. In Justice Kennedy's own words, quote, here Richter's attorney represented him with a vigor and conducted a skillful cross-examination. As noted, defense counsel elicited concessions from the state experts and was able to draw attention to weaknesses in the state's conclusions, close quote. Finally, given the strong case presented by the prosecution, there was no showing that any possible ineffectiveness had prejudiced the defendant's case. So Justice Kennedy said, well, even if you had shown that the counsel was ineffective, the second prong of Strickland versus Washington was not met because there was no prejudice to the defendant's case, given the strong case that the prosecution presented. Only Justice Kagan did not take part in the decision. Only Justice Ginsburg wrote a separate concurrence, arguing that counsel had been ineffective, but agreeing that there had been no prejudice in light of the strong case presented by the prosecution. The unanimity of the justices in this decision may well indicate that something of a line is being drawn with regard to how much latitude defendants will be allowed in the future regarding the appeals process. It may also indicate some continuing support for federalism concerns, at least in the area of criminal law. Whether such federalism concerns will enjoy support in the area of social issues sure to come before the High Court in the near future is another question altogether.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.